Welcome to Solder Smoke, where we talk about all things electronic and geeky. We meet on Echolink and swap ideas related to workbench radio projects. If you have any questions about this podcast or suggestions for future casts, send a note to soldersmoke@yahoo.com. As always, have fun, melt solder, and pass along your ideas.
KL7R, KL7R. In Juneau, Alaska, this is M0HBR in London. Are you there, Mike?
Yeah, M0HBR, KL7R. Good morning, Bill. Sounds like you got a bit of a frog in your throat there, over.
Yeah, I just woke up. Good evening to you. Happy Friday night. It's early Saturday morning here. September 30th, 2006. This is, I guess, Solder Smoke 33, if I'm not mistaken. Let me know if I've got the numbers wrong, Mike. Early morning here. It's well, it's not that early. It's later than normal. It's 06:50 local. Let's see, 05:50 UTC or GMT. And we have thunderbolts and lightning here in Old London this morning in late September. Very strange. The storm doesn't seem close. It's raining. But there's been a lot of lightning and thunder. As a matter of fact, that's what got me up. It might be the it might have been the radio gods telling me to get up and do a Solder Smoke episode. KL7R, M0HBR.
All right, Bill. Well, sorry about the thunder and lightning there. We get that so rarely here. It's about once every couple of years. Well, maybe two or three times every couple of years. We had it a few times here a few summers back, but this summer's been so wet. We're on track to have the wettest summer on record here, and for Juneau, that's saying something. And kind of dreary here. Good to hear you again. I have to head out of town here in a couple of days, so good to catch you today. All that talk we were doing about RCA jacks and versus BNCs, I got a care package from Kay, I think. I forgot. I'll get it right here on the next over. Maybe you could talk a minute there, Bill, and I'll get it squared away there, over.
Yeah, I saw the email about that. Kay jumped in and is going to restock your junk box there with BNCs. You could tell there was a kind of a surge of concern for you, Mike. There, they thought you were slipping into the territory of RCA jack users, and the true Solder Smoke brethren wanted to make you stick with the good old BNC jack. So. Kay very kindly sent off a package. You know, it's one of the many really nice things about ham radio is you do get that kind of support. When I was off in the Dominican Republic, Tom W1HET, who I spoke to all the time on 20 meter CW, he would send me care packages with all kinds of little pieces that I could never find down there, and that kept many homebrew projects going. So has Kay converted you back to BNC jacks? Go ahead.
Well, I have no excuse now. I have a number of them and a number of different styles. So I guess I have no reason to go off on my RCA jack candidate. It would have worked though. WD0BDK. Kay sent some circuit board and some shrink wrap and some a really cool thing, some NPO capacitors. I'm kind of in need of them. I have a few of them, but I got a pretty good selection. And just kind of a whole box full of cool stuff. Haven't really gone through it all here. There's one particular item that's an LED on a looks like a headphone jack LED attached to a headphone jack. I have no idea what I can use that for, but it's intriguing. So that was going on. I just wanted to make sure I got that in there. I just wanted to say thanks to Kay there for that. That was awful nice. So I sent you a note about the QST50, you called it. It's the QST Homebrew Challenge. Apparently they've changed the rules on that thing where not only is it some voice mode like double sideband, upper sideband, lower sideband, or AM plus CW. It has to be CW now. And apparently now it's 40 meters. And apparently there's an additional class where you can attach your computer and use your computer as part of the radio. I wonder what you thought about that, Bill.
I hadn't seen it, Mike, but I just saw your email this morning. I didn't get it to open up the link. But is it that, I wonder how that's going to change things, because then you're going to get all the software-derived radios in it. I have to say, I haven't looked at it, but I kind of don't like it, because I think it gets away from two important aspects of the whole thing. One was the home brew, because I mean, you're making use of if you're using the computer, if you're depending on the computer, you're making use of a huge appliance. Let's face it, not many of us have homebrewed our computers. The second is the under 50. There's no unless you're it would be hard to get the under 50 aspect of it still, with the computer. So I guess maybe they're trying to bring the new technology in, but I was thinking completely at the opposite end of the technology spectrum, with simple DSP diode ring kind of setups, but a software derived radio. Well, that's it's great. It's interesting technology, but most of it is not, let's face it, homebrew, and it's certainly not under $50. I wonder, what do you think about it, Mike?
I think it you can kind of tell where it's going to go. You can tell that that it's going to be some IQ quadrature phasing method or quadrature single sideband generation method rig, maybe with DDS, that's going to win, and it's going to be all on a circuit board and lots of large single-purpose chips and large chips like synthesizers and quadrature generators and things like that. I'm not sure that I was reading what they wanted. They wanted people to get on HF. A lot of people are getting licenses and are just staying on VHF and never get on HF because the cost is too high. And I think that's what they wanted, but it's just a little kind of tell it's going to kind of force who wins. It's, I would say that somebody like Farhan or somebody that homebrewed it MacGyver style should be in the running and. As something you could homebrew, but I think what they really want is performance for cheap, and that kind of goes a different direction. I'm not sure how it's going to turn out. It seems to me like something like what was the name of that? There's that new Dan Taylor rig that's being sold. It's a transceiver on 30 meters. I forget the name of it, but they were talking about it, and it's basically use the Talo mixer and quadrature and stuff like that. I'm just waiting for somebody to come in with quadrature audio to generate single sideband, and then that would be the winner. but what I'm thinking is that somebody's going to come in with quadrature audio from a PC-based application to generate the single sideband and to code the single sideband. Anyway, kind of interesting, but it's a lot higher tech than I thought was the original intent there, Bill. Over.
Yeah. Well, it'd be interesting. I mean, maybe they'll come up with interesting rigs, and of course, other folks can still design the real simple, discrete component, simple rigs that we've been talking about, or something along the lines of the Farhan's BitX 20. I think for if they're looking at people who are new to the hobby and new to home brewing, that's the way to go, because you learn so much more in the process. I mean, I don't even like to use any 602 chips. I mean, I use them a lot, but I prefer not to, because in a certain sense they are kind of mysterious black boxes that you're just you're trying to get away from the black box rig. You're trying to get away from the big ICOM, Yaesu, black box, and then you end up using a lot of little tiny black boxes in the rig, but it's still the same problem. There's still, the black boxes. So with the NA602, of course, you can figure it out, the circuitry inside the Gilbert cell mixer. You can figure that out, and you can understand it, but a lot of these chips, a lot of these single-purpose chips, and certainly a Pentium 4 chip are way beyond the capability of anybody to really understand it at a component level. I mean, you're not going to sit there and figure out how the 20 million transistors in there are interacting in the circuit flow. But so I think that, if they're just trying to get folks on the air with simple gear, that might be a way to go, but if you're trying to get them on with simple gear that they really understand and can really modify and repair and get attached to, I think the simpler the better. Mike, go ahead.
Well, Roger, I was crawling around W7COI site the other day, and I've always wanted to build a Micro Mountaineer. I told you that, and I kind of built it a couple of times. I never finished it, but I kind of built it in different ways. And I was looking at the Micro Mountaineer version 2, and it Micro Mountaineer Revisited, and it basically uses that two-chip receiver that's in Experimental Methods. It's basically an NE602 and an LM386. So. That made me feel good. At least my homebrew rig had something to do with the Micro Mountaineer there. Let's see. Not too much happening here. I fixed three radios, two Yaesu 101s and one Kenwood TS520. Got them working and sent them back. One of the FT101s, I almost caught on fire there, Bill. Over.
Oh, I'm sorry for the delay here. I was just looking for something that you said something that got me thinking. Fixed radios, but blazing Yaesus, and wow. See, that's what you get when you start working on commercial equipment there, Mike. You said so many things that sparked me, that got me thinking about things here. Yeah, the Neophyte that you mentioned, the NE602 LM386 combo. Yeah, that's the standard sort of Neophyte receiver. But even there, it's they're fun receivers, and we've all built them. But I always thought that they were not really good for real Neophytes. I think it's better to build something with the discrete components and give somebody a better sense of what's going on in the circuitry. I happen to be fooling around right now with a little direct conversion receiver. Your our last Solder Smoke episode made me realize that I was spending far too much time over here at the computer and not enough time at the bench. So I cleared off the bench, and what I did was I pulled out a I had done a prototype of my ceramic oscillator for 20 meters. This is the variable ceramic oscillator, I guess you'd call it, using ceramic resonators at 14.3 megahertz. I have one of these inside my my DSB rig. Oh, there's Billy. Hey, good morning, Billy. You see that? Anyway, I was saying I had the I built one of these into my DSB rig, and but I had a prototype sitting here that was perfectly good. So after you encouraged me to melt some more solder, Mike, I went over and said, okay, let me turn this thing into, and I kind of flipped a coin, transmitter or receiver. And it kind of landed on the receiver side. So I have the oscillator going there at 14.3, variable, pretty nicely up and down. I looked around the shack and I found an SBL3 mixer circuit, just a diode ring mixer in a nice little can there. I picked it up at a ham fest here in the UK. Okay, so now I've got the mixer. I have I had already built a little RF amplifier to get the output from the oscillator up to the, I think you need 1 volt RMS or something from the oscillator to get the diode ring mixer to work right. So I had that. Kind of went to the net and found the pinout for the SBL3. There we go. Now I need a little RF amplifier. So I went to the junk box and I had these, I don't know if you remember, but years ago in QST, International Crystals Manufacturing Company used to sell these little modular kits. The last episode you were talking about modules. They sell these little modular kits called like the Sax 1 and the Max 1, the Bax 1. And they're little tiny kind of, I guess, 1 by 1 inch circuit boards with, one of them will have a broadband amp, one of them will have kind of an RF amp, one of them will have a mixer. Somewhere along the line I picked up a bunch of these things, and anyway, one of them now provides the RF amplifier, and one of them provides the first stage of an audio amplifier. And it's fun. It's all just, it's really ugly. It's a whole bunch of circuit boards just sitting next to each other on the bench. But the oscillator is oscillating, the RF amplifier is amplifying, the mixer is mixing, and I haven't actually received any signals yet, but I'm getting close. And this is all the result of your pointing out the deficit in solder smoke here at M0HBR. So that's my report, Mike. Tell us about fixing the rigs and the one that emitted a different kind of smoke. KL7R, M0HBR.
Well, good morning, Billy, and cool on that stuff, Bill. I didn't put an RF amp in front of my SBL1 receivers. Maybe I needed to. I thought that putting an RF amp in there would cause overload, but maybe not. I was thinking on the two chip receiver that I should modify the two-chip receiver to do the JF1 OZL hack to get, 74 dB out of a LM386. Normally they're, I don't know, 20 or 40 dB, can't remember. And you can raise one lead off the ground and get a bunch of gain. So I was thinking about modifying my two-chip receiver to do that and get a little extra gain there. Cool on your thing. Be interesting to see what you use for an audio amp. Maybe you can take what you've got right now and stick it into the sound card microphone of your sound card and use your computer as a as the audio train. if you've got microphone level audio out already, you could do that. Let's see that one Yaesu FT101. I didn't have a power cable for, and so I was making a power cable for it, and it has a really weird pinout. In the back, there's like a 9 or 10 pin connector,
12-pin connector that if you wire it up one way, it's for DC 12, and if you wire it up another way, it's 110 AC. And I wired up 110 AC jumper and plugged it in, and it started receiving, and smoke started boiling out. And I said, oh no, this is no good. So then I got a real power cable and plugged it in to the rig, and the same smoke came out. So even with a real Yaesu 110 power cable, it still smoke came out of it. And so I took it apart, it turned out after a bunch of searching and scratching that there's some switching transistors on the back to switch the I assume up to 110 AC, and they were short of the ground, and the biasing resistors or emitter resistors were glowing white and smoking. So I disconnected them, and all is wonderful. It still works on 110, and so that radio is out the door and working. It just doesn't work on Oh, you know that MFJ antenna analyzer I got for $40. That was broken. I fixed it. I replaced four surface mount Schottky diodes, about twice the size of a grain of pepper, with some Schottky diodes that I had, and standing them up on end. You know, I didn't have any surface mount Schottkys, but I had some regular Schottkys, and I replaced them with that. Had two burnt out circuit boards on the thing, and I jumper passed them. And it's working, and I'm happy, Bill. M0HBR, KL7R.
KL7R, M0HBR. Well, very cool, Mike. Wow. Yeah. Well, as you talked about letting the smoke out there of the Yaesu rigs, I always like those stories where, you know, there was a couple of spoof QSD articles where they, in April, they talked about how each electronic component has an essential element called smoke, and the home brewer's job is to make sure that the smoke remains inside the component. And if you do something wrong, you let the smoke out. And that's where we get the term, the smoke test. But, well, the Schottky diodes, yeah, I've been thinking about that. There's been some discussion on QRPL about the zero bias diodes. I think you probably saw those that email train. When I first saw it, I thought it might have been you who had set it off, because I know you were working on the Schottkys in the MFJ analyzer there. But I like the kind of the retro back from surface mount approach that you've taken there. That's a good one, and well, I think you're going to really get a lot of use out of that thing. From what I understand, that MFJ piece of gear that you have there is pretty much a complete test bench in a box. So that's going to be a real asset for you. Couple things. One thing I just wanted to throw out to the listeners there. You mentioned Wes Hayward. I think it's his son, who's Rick, who's also an important person in the QRP home brew world. And this name, it rang a bell, and I remember in the in Scientific American for a long time, they ran a column called the Amateur Scientist. It was a wonderful column. I think recently they got away from it. But it was edited by a guy who, C.L. Strong, edited it. And I have a collection, it's a compilation of really great Amateur Scientist articles from the 1950s and 60s. My mother got me the book years ago. I lost it, and then I went out to eBay and got a copy of it. But it's great stuff. It's the kind of thing that they would never, ever, ever be able to publish today. It's like how to make your own X-ray machine, a homebrew atom smasher, build your own rockets using dangerous metal tubes and gunpowder. I mean, just all of it is just a lawsuit lawyer's dream. they would never do it today, but there it is. And the guy who illustrated it, is the whole thing has got these really great drawings in it. And I think the illustrator's name is Rick Hayward. And I'm wondering if there's any family connection there. I wouldn't be surprised, because it's all the same kind of stuff that that the Haywards today would be really interested in. So I wonder if any of our listeners know if there's any family connection there, or if anyone knows about these wonderful articles that I'm talking about. You mentioned the need for an RF amp. You know, there's a really great rule of thumb on this subject, and I think it's been actually sent to us by guys like Wes Hayward, and it's shown up in Doug DeMaul articles and everything else. And it's a really great way to know, kind of a simple homebrew way to know whether you need an RF amplifier stage before the mixer. You build the receiver, and then you disconnect the antenna. You listen to the noise coming out of the thing, and you connect the antenna. And if you hear an increase in the noise, then you're already, your receiver is sensitive enough to pick up the noise floor. And adding an RF stage will not do you, RF amplifier stage ahead of the mixer will not do you any good. If you hook up the antenna and you don't hear an increase in the noise, then the sensitivity is not enough to let you pick up the noise floor. And at that point, you might want to consider an RF amplifier stage ahead of the mixer. Without any fancy test gears or calculations of the noise floor or the noise figure, I always thought that was a pretty good rule, Mike. I do have one ahead of the mixer in my rig, but that was just mostly because I had this international crystal little board, and I wanted to try to put it to use. KL7R M0HBR.
Roger. I think it's Roger Hayward, and I think his call is K7EXM. I'm looking, digging around the net here. I don't think it's Rick Hayward. I think it's Roger. I missed the name of that book. that sounds like a psycho book. That sounds like one that would cause you to lose fingers if you were not too smart. I didn't put an RF amp in front of mine. I thought about it, I was trying to be a purist. I was trying to be have a bulletproof front end. I don't know why I needed a bulletproof front end when signal levels aren't that strong up here. I guess if I was in Europe, where you are, having a bulletproof front end is a big deal. You can get receiver overload, and putting an RF amp in front of your SBL3 might cause receiver overload. But if you don't have that problem, you don't have the problem. It'd be interesting to see once you get enough RF audio amplification on there, if you can detect receiver overload from shortwave broadcast stations. That'll be a cool thing to know. I've been busy. I just can't think of what it was here recently. Bill, been playing around with a number of things, but they're escaping me now. Back to you, M0HBR, KL7R.
KL7R, M0HBR. Yeah, apologies there. It is Roger. I was thinking about Rick popped in my head because I was looking at Rick Campbell's article in the current QST about his receiver. Really beautiful picture of it on the front cover of QST, and always very interesting circuitry from Rick Campbell. Yeah, but it is Roger Hayward. Yeah, the CL Strong book. That's a lot of fun. You can get a hold of one of those. Let's see. One thing I was going to ask you, and I've asked this question before, and maybe you could help me, Mike, and maybe some of the listeners can provide some suggestions. But I really need to do something about my soldering iron situation. As a member of the solder smoke team, I need to have a decent soldering iron arrangement here, and I'm back in the dark ages here. And as I go out on the net, I read about all kinds of different irons and tips and workstations and everything else. And I'm really, as like I said, I'm in the dark ages. I read about ironclad tips, and one guy was talking about silver-plated tips, and all kinds of new tips out there. I ask for the advice of the brotherhood here. Let me know what kind of soldering iron I should use to replace the little 15 or 20 watt kind of simple Weller, plug it in the wall, no temperature control, regular old bit device that I've been using. I don't intend to make the transition to lead free solder. I think I'm going to stick with the leaded kind as long as I can find supplies, which I suspect will be a long time. But I do think I'm going to stick with 60-40 rosin core solder, more or less. So if anyone out there can tell me what kind of soldering iron I should buy, what kind of tip I should use, and if they have any suggestions for a nice, simple temperature control workstation, I'd appreciate hearing them. Well, Mike, you sound like you've been doing lots of solder smoke generation. I've just got that one project I reported on. I'll let you guys know on the progress. I haven't received any signals yet, so I haven't worried about receiver overload. I was just delighted to be able to send RF in through one side, the local oscillator in through the other, and have audio, you know, pop out at the appropriate point on the SBL3. I've never used one of these mixers before. And it's fun to use the International Crystal Manufacturing Company little modular components. I'm sure many of our listeners remember them. They always had ads in QST, and it was all very, very modular. So that's fun. I've been doing a lot of too much web surfing. I've put a number of videos on the video page of my website. It's www.gadgeteer.us, and there's now a video page. And I try to look at one YouTube video every morning, a few times each week. And most of the YouTube videos, of course, are really ridiculous. They're a lot of them are just, you know, goofy college students playing with video cameras, and there's absolutely nothing of interest or use there. But there are some technically interesting videos that pop up there, and they're worth looking at. And whenever I find one, I put a link to it on my video page. So there is some really cool videos there. A lot of it related to ham radio, but a lot more of it just related to people who are interested in home brewing and building things. There's a video link I put on there about this guy named Lloyd who's building an airplane, and he's building it in his garage. And there's a little 9 or 10 minute video about Lloyd building his airplane in his garage. It's pretty well done, and anybody who likes to build things in a home workshop would find it of interest. And I also found the CNN clip. The CNN did an interview with Ashar Farhan in India about the BidX 20, and I put a link to that on the video page on my website. So you know, anybody wants to see Farhan being interviewed by CNN, and they actually show him working on the BidX 20, which I thought was very, very cool. The link is there on my page, and you go take a look at it. So that's my web notes for the week, Mike. KL7RM's Earl HBR.
Oh, I'm glad you did that, because I had one thing I wanted to mention, and that reminded me. As far as soldering stations, I sent you this link before, but go to Ocean State Electronics, oselectronics.com, and look in their soldering stations. I bought what they're calling an SL5, preassembled with the iron, and it was cheap. It was like, you know, 20 or 30 bucks, and I got 4 or 5 extra tips for it, and I've been using the heck out of it, and I've not burnt up a single tip. So I don't know what the tips are made of, but they're tough. I haven't killed a tip yet. I've got 4 or 5 spares, so it's been a really good iron, and I haven't killed a tip. So I bought a number of Radio Shack soldering irons, and I would burn up a tip on them in 2 weeks. I don't know what it is I did with those tips, but I would kill those tips in about 2 weeks. But this SL5, something like, you know, I think it's something like $30. Solder station kit. You can buy it as a kit, or you can have it pre-built. The pre-built one's like $25. Comes with an iron, and it's variable. It's not temperature controlled, but it's variable temperature, and it works great for me. I've been really happy with it. My opinion, my input into your soldering situation. I have a website also that I wanted to mention. This is one of those geek to live sort of sites instead of live to geek. This is www.pocketmod.com. This is sort of a cross between Origami and iPods. Bill, M0HBR, KL7R.
Origami iPods. Well, you got to explain, Mike. Tell us about the Origami and the iPods. Go ahead.
Well, go to pocketmod.com, and it's sort of like a time manager. I don't know. I'm not that organized of a person, but you know, you have organizers, and they have lists and contacts and Gantt charts and calendars and things like that. Well, this thing here is like if you want a calendar, you click on calendar, and you get a full year for 2006, and then you slide 2006 over into your pocket organizer, your personal organizer, like a palm. This is a palm on a piece of paper. Anyway, you get 5 pages worth of palm, and you make your own pocket mod, and then you cut it and fold it in such a way that it turns into an 8-page booklet, and it's terminally geeky, but it's actually useful there, over.
Well, we'll have to check that out. We don't get too much use of Origami here in the in the solder smoke world. I think, yes, we've been needing some Origami here on solder smoke, so let's take a look at that, Mike. But we have to be careful here, because the next thing you know, we'll be doing haiku, and I think that'll be over the line for most of our listeners. It's kind of hard to work that into the solder smoke world, but Origami and iPods, and we'll check out PocketMod. Sounds interesting, different. Thanks for the advice on the solder station. That sounds just like what I need. So I'll go check out Ocean State. I was an old customer of theirs for a long time. On the YouTube business, I hope more people make little videos on their projects. It's so easy to do. I mean, you were kind of chuckling about my video on the homebrew 20-meter DSB rig, but it's so simple. I mean, you just get the video camera going, and I did a little intro based on a little piece of paper that I drew on with a magic marker and invented HBR Productions. I turned on the HW8 to 20 meter CW, and then I had just let that run during the filming of the credits at the beginning. And then, real simple, I just used a Windows Movie Maker. The whole thing took me about 5 minutes, 2 minutes to film and 3 minutes to process, and up it went up onto YouTube. And it's great fun. I've got the thing's got over 500 downloads, and I get nice feedback from it. There's not a lot of kind of ham radio homebrew stuff up there, but they're getting a lot of downloads. Somebody told me that they have like 100 million downloads a day or something on YouTube. It's really an amazing operation. I think they just sold the whole operation for $1.5 billion. So YouTube is it's one of these things that just jumped up very quickly and became really big, but there's a lot of useful applications for it, for ham radio and this kind of thing, kind of video blogging, that kind of stuff. Yeah, so I'll continue to work on the little ceramic direct conversion receiver, and hopefully by next week we'll be able to report on some signals actually received. I always think that when they launch a new telescope, they have what they call first light. you know, when they first expose it to the starlight and take a look through it. I think a similar thing should be done for receivers, I guess, first signals. So maybe next week we'll be able to report on first signals from the really junk box DSP receiver, and maybe I'll play some of it here on Solder Smoke. I'm not going to bang the gong this week, Mike, because we have a visitor. Billy's grandma is here, and her room is right across the hall. I don't want to wake her up with the gong, so we'll leave a mailbag for next week. And who knows? Maybe next week we might have a special guest here. We'll just leave it at that. I hope that works out. KL7R, M0HBR.
Okay, Bill. Yeah, it's probably a good time to tie the ribbons on it here. I did want to say thanks to Kay there, especially for being so kind. That was awful nice. All right. Well, kind of a nice visit this morning. About time for you and Billy to have your breakfast. I need to wind up a few things here. I'll get this one bolted up and put it up hopefully before I go south. If not, I'll get it back after I come back from Seattle. 73 for now, Bill. M0HBR. Have a good morning. KL7R.
Okay, Mike. Great. Yeah, it's time for breakfast here. Have a good evening and have a good trip. And yeah, this was fun. We actually got to discuss all kinds of different smoke. And you're right. Getting the smoke back into the components is difficult. 73. Have a good evening and a good week. KL7R, M0HBR, 73.